ask, but isn't this system too stream unstable also? Yes, it is too stream unstable also. And it is also unstable to many other instabilities. But in this, so we can talk more about this paper because Federico Fusa is in the et al. Here. So if you want to know more about it, he was there. But in these conditions, this mod grew faster than the two-stream. Okay, so it was two-stream stable, but you cannot see it because here Weibull won the linear race, I would say. So you see that from the very beginning, if you want to interpret experiment, you need to appeal to the concept of mod competition. And then, as Christophe said, in the real world, when you take a perturbation and you Fourier extend it, you're not going to find one single mode. Okay, you are going to find all of the modes. Okay, except if you have an extremely pure perturbation, but I don't really know how in the real world you can reach that. And so came the question: okay, if that's unstable and that's unstable, what about this one? Okay, and if they are unstable as well, what is their growth rate? When should they dominate, govern the unstable spectrum? So just a quick words about the formalism, mathematical formalism that you use to tackle these guys. So it's you assume a collisionless environment. So in the Vlasov equation, you have zero here. If you had something, it would be a Boltzmann or Fokker-Planck, or there's a who's who of a kinetic equation. Because also you're collisionless, you work at the level of the distribution function. Okay, then you close this with Maxwell's equation. You linearize this all. You find a dielectric tensor which is non-diagonal. Okay, and usually the dispersion equation is horrible, and there's no way to simplify it. So you just need to eat it and take it as it is. So, and then you see that this dielectric tensor depends on k and omega because you linearize around equilibrium, assuming harmonic perturbation. So once you've chosen your k, this determinant equals zero is going to define you omega as a function of k, and the imaginary part is the growth rate. Okay, and also the formalism itself gives you the kind of electric field that is going to be generated by the instability, because this is the Engel vector of this matrix. So if, as long as you are non-relativistic, things are relatively simple, because you have to solve this kind of equation, and the Landau damping is there, and recently people get the Field Medal for solving the Landau damping. So it's not that simple, if you can be awarded the Field Medal for this. But for a physicist, which doesn't really care about the purity of math, and as long as you stay in the linear regime, no, because we do think that you would horrify a French mathematician. I was raised their way, the way they were raised, and so I know that which kind of trauma you undergo. Just writing this kind of integral for a French-raised mathematician is an heresy. There is a singularity. You cannot write this, et cetera, et cetera. So, but there's no French or Russian mathematician here. I can go on. But as long as you're non-relativistic, usually you just need to tackle this kind of dispersion equation, which is so relatively simple. Okay. Now, and partly because the kind of modes that are likely to govern the spectrum are, you can tackle them by this kind of equation. Now, if you are relativistic, any part of the K spectrum can potentially lead the race. And so you need to look at all the possible Ks, which drives you to solve this determinant equals zero. And the tensor element here, yeah, are that guys. And technically, when you play with this, what really complicates the problem is that you have a Lorentz factor here. You see that you integrate a derivative of the distribution function along the trig direction of the momentum space. And in the Lorentz factor, you have the Px, Py, Pz. And unless you do some approximation, or you choose a really special distribution function, this is going to couple the three axes of integration. And so usually when you're in the non-analytic regime, usually you can always end up separating the integrals, triple integrals into three. Here you can't. So fortunately, really lucky, you can take a really special distribution function just that you kind of define it so that you can compute this. Okay, let's put it this way. Now if you take the relativistic Maxwellian, which is technically the Maxwell-Jutta distribution, people in the 50s found a mathematical change of variables that reduces the three-dimensional integral into a one-dimensional integral. But you cannot go further. But I just wanted to show you that technically that's one of the main problems. Okay, so now let's see what you get if you compute this order. So let's say here, so we have again, here you could imagine that it's a pair beam, okay? So if this is a pair beam, it's already charge and current neutral, so you don't need the electron from the background plasma to drift back slowly to conserve the current. Now, since in the IGM, Terre-Blazar IGM business, the pair beam is, I don't know, 10 to the minus 8 in density of the background plasma. I think it's really diluted with respect to the background plasma. Anyway, the drifting down of this electron would be so slow that even in this model, you can assume that you can say, okay, the electron back to the background plasma, they don't move, and I can just put a pair beam here instead of an electron beam, and that's it. So if you compute, so you see we work in this kind of reduced wave vector, dimensionless wave vector. So VB is the velocity of the beam, it's C. Okay, in the relative regime, it's C. The advantage of having VB here is that the profile is always the same, even if you go to the non-relativistic region. So that's why it's cool to put VB here. So that's the flow axis, that's the perpendicular axis. So if you compute the two-stream instability growth rate, you find this. So this is, this result is 70 years old, and it's textbook, et cetera, et cetera. So you have a cutoff here, and you have a maximum here. Now, you see you have a really small Lorentz factor. So that's the Lorentz factor of this guy in the red frame of the protons, of the background protons. And here, Weibull doesn't grow really quick. And also, it saturates at a large scale. If you put temperature, you kill these large K modes. But here, I repeat everything. The calculation has been conducted in the approximation where everything is cold. So everyone goes exactly the same velocity. And now, if you compute the growth rate of all the Ks possible, you find this surface, so which relies on that one here and that one here. Okay. So now I'm going to show you what happens if you increase the Lorentz factor from 1 to 5. To 5 or 4, don't remember. So you see that the surface, so because the electrons are heavier and heavier, the growth rate, generally speaking, just lowers down. But it's not homogeneous. Here, you really got down a lot. Here, less, and here, even less. Okay. And you see that we went from a regime governed by the two-stream instability to a regime clearly governed by these oblique modes. Okay. And so now I go to the scalings. So still, calculations can be conducted almost exactly if your beam is really diluted with respect to the background plasma. Why? Because in this regime, the beam is a perturbation to the background plasma. So you can expand, you can terror expand a lot of things, and it works well. So this one, for example, so Weibull, goes like if you just look at the Lorentz factor, 1 over square root. Two stream, 1 over Lorentz factor, and these guys here, you have a Lorentz factor to do 1/3. And that's the origin of the existence of a regime where these guys are going to be the most efficient to grow. So again, Ehud Nakar in the paper in the Nakar, Brett, and Milo Savevic, he came up with this nice physical explanation that this instability doesn't like at all relativity regime, because two-stream instability, if that's the flow, two-stream instability have the particle oscillate along the flow. And so along the flow, they are really heavy. Whereas it's much easier to bend the beam. Now, why are these guys, I will show you a Fermi calculation, recovering exactly that growth rate. But I can also already comment on this. This one, the filamentation instability, comes when you have two currents exactly overlapping, and then you separate them. And so if you think about it, this one is going to recreate a Lorentz force on this one a Lorentz force on this one, and the Lorentz force is going to repel them even more. And since it's Lorentz force, you need to have a relative velocity. You have a V cross B. So that's why you have the beta here. Beta is beam velocity over C, okay? And then also, since there is an inertial business into play, when the things are getting relatively thin, they are getting heavier and heavier, okay? So that's why you have 1 over square root of gamma B here. So when people are trying to do this, to see this in experiment, if they can choose the Lorentz factor, which is usually not really the case, you just try to have some relativistic counter-streaming system, and choosing the Lorentz factor is tricky. But you see that this instability doesn't like low velocities because it's based on the Lorentz force. It doesn't like high velocities because of the gamma B here. And there's an optimum at Lorentz factor square root of 3. So in the table of business, you don't care because you are 10 to the 8 or 10 to the 9 or something like this. But in the experimental settings, I guess you care. And something also I just wanted to emphasize, these modes, they are not the result of any mode interaction between filamentation and two-stream modes or whatever. They are completely linear. They don't need these guys to exist. You have, by the way, situations where Weibull is strictly killed, 0, and you still have oblique modes growing. Okay, so it's not a mode-mode interaction, kind of quasi-linear business or whatever. It's just plain linear. So just wanted to emphasize that these oblique guys and this one-third scaling also is really old. So I was minus 8 years here. But you see, it was in 1960, so there's this paper by Bludman, Watson, and Rosenbluth. And so why do I put Russian dolls here? Because here you have, so this is a growth rate, okay, imaginary of omega. This is in this paper. Here you have a one-third power. And you see here you have frequency that they define. And they are defined in terms of other frequencies, which are defined in terms of other frequencies. But when you open up everything and you unplug everything, so that's why you have, it's like Russian dolls parameters, you find the 1 over gamma to the 1/3. Now, 10 years later, the Russians made it much easier. And here you have directly this square root of 3. You see, that's exactly what we had here. Okay, square root of 3, 2 to the 1, density ratio, Lorentz factor to the 1/3. So, and so this was in the 70s, well, in 70. So in this paper, they work out the nonlinear theory, so they want nonlinear, and et cetera, but they were cold, okay? That's the cold result. So now, we've seen the cold result, and we've seen that they'll be out there for a while. And also, one of the main points of this is this Lorentz factor scaling of the oblique modes, which is the basic reason why, when things get relativistic, they can govern the full spectrum. So what if you put temperature in there? So I'm just going to quickly go over this... here, you put temperature in the beam. So I mean the velocity spread in the beam. So instead, here for the calculation, instead of putting a Gaussian energy spread or velocity spread. We put what is called in personal physics a water bag. I don't know if it's, this is in true the astrophysical vocabulary, but personal physics vocabulary, it's a water bag. And it just makes the computation much easier to solve. And on my PC, this little movie I'm going to show you is 10 seconds of CPU instead of 3 weeks. So that's why I love these guys. So if you want to see what happens now, here I'm cold, okay? I'm just going to put in the beam some velocity spread in the transverse direction, not in the parallel direction. And so you see that here also you have a non-homogeneous reaction to temperature. It's clear that variable doesn't like at all temperature, while two-stream doesn't care. And these optic modes, they were hardly affected. You see that the maximum scale here goes to a point 25, I would say. And at the beginning, we had a point 25. Okay, point. So the bottom line here is that the growth rate of the most unstable mode has hardly changed. So that's one of the reasons why in a short fusion it was a bad news. Because at the principle people thought they would have to deal with just these instabilities, and so they were hurry because with thermal spread we can kill the instability. And then they were unhurry and unhurry because no, it's still as unstable. So in fusion, instabilities are bad news, and in astro, they are good news. So that's why it's funnier to work in astro than especially if you have bad news to announce. So why do we have this? Why do you have this issue that if you put thermal spread first, generally speaking, you reduce the instability, and second, you don't reduce it homogeneously, as you see. The more you are perpendicular to the beam direction, the K is perpendicular to the direction, the more you are going to be sensitive to thermal spread in the beam. So it's kind of easy to, it's not easy to compute, but it's easy to understand. Let's say, so it's all the, these instabilities are all matter of wave-particle interaction. And particles which are in phase with a growing wave can exchange energy. So let's say you have a bunch of particles here in phase with this wave. And let's look at what happens during one growth period. Okay? You see that if you are cold, if particles initially were in phase with your wave, they stay in phase with your wave. So the energy exchange can be optimum during one growth period, two growth period, until the growth instability starts doing something on your background, on your plasma, okay, which is the nonlinear region. Now, if you have a velocity spread, you see that at the beginning you were really well tuned, and now you detune. So you started with all particles in phase with your wave, and then the interaction is no longer the same. So if this is, I forget about the 2 pi, if this is 1 over k, and this is going to be your velocity spread divided by the growth rate, because you want to see, if you want to know if the growing mode sees a cold plasma or sees a thermal spread, you need to look at what's going on which time scale, on the time scale of one growth period. Okay. So you look at, okay, let's say I have the growth rate, and I look at what's going on during one growth period, one over the growth rate. And if you have this, if this is much larger than this, okay, during one growth period, the wave doesn't know that there was a velocity spread. And so the wave grows as it were cold. And so this condition is already in this Feinberg paper in 1920. And you see that it's not going to be homogeneous over the K spectrum, because this velocity spread can change according to the direction you're looking at. The growth rate, you've seen, changes with K like crazy. The one over k changes with k. This is why part of the n-table spectrum are going to see some thermal spread, and others are not going to see it. So first, one of the generic kinetic group, the parallel thermal spread, so if this is the beam, if you look, just look at the distribution function along the flow, you could wonder whether it's important or not. It's going with respect to the instabilities. And usually it hardly matters. Why? Because if you are non-relativistic, a symmetric energy spread is going to give a symmetric velocity spread. Now if you are relativistic, everyone is squeezed against C anyway. Okay. So you really need to push like crazy the parallel temperature to have a velocity spread which is visible by the growing modes. Okay. So that's why usually the first approximation, one of the first things you get rid of if you want to simplify the calculation is, okay, can I put a delta Dirac, Dirac delta, in the parallel direction? Now, what about the perp spread? Okay, so let's say here you have three particles in the beam, and here you have a wave co-moving because the unstable waves are in phase with the beam. So co-moving with the flow. So you see that the wave doesn't care about this spread. you stay in tune with the wave regardless of what happens in the transverse direction. Okay, that's why, for example, two-sum instability doesn't care at all, but it's rigorous because you have scalar product all over the place that just goes zero. But it comes from there. Now, if your k is perp to the flow, okay? Now here I sit in the reframe of the wave. Here you see that a perp thermal spread is going to be a problem for the growth of the wave. So that's why, if you wonder intuitively, okay, which are going the effect of spread in the beam? So our pair plasma. The parallel spread hardly matters for anyone. And then the perp spread matters a lot for filamentation or Weibull, then a little bit less for oblique, and then a little bit less for two stream. Okay. And so here, just something similar to what I thought. So another series of calculation where you just draw the perpendicular spread of the beam, and you see that you quickly kill everything which is there. The frontier is this critical angle that if you work with a Waterbag distribution function, you can extract exactly. But you're still almost as unstable as the beginning, but the most unstable mode has changed. That's the only difference. So there have been many works just to check this instability theory all over the K spectra. So here you have Dickman et al. 2006, Dremier 2007. So this theoretical spectrum was computed in this paper. And see, it really comes close. This is Frederiksen et al. And Kong et al. In 2009. So that's the kind of spectra they computed, and that's the kind of spectra you can extract from particulate cell simulations. So until now we were either cold, or I would say naively hot, with a water bag distribution. So that's exactly. There was no communication between Christoph Frommer and I, but that's exactly the growth rate he showed this morning. And that's straight from this paper. So what if for these guys and the background electrons, you take now what is called the Maxwell-Jutner distribution function. So I don't remember the parameters for this, but it should be, I would say, madly relativistic, because oblique modes are winning. So here, that's the parallel axis. So two-stream instability is there, okay? Weibull of filamentation is there, and here we are governed by oblique modes. So for these papers, we purposely ran particularization simulation in each domain when we thought this is going to win, this is going to win, this is going to win. And I'm not going to emphasize everything that is in the paper, but we purposely run the particularization simulation in points of the phase pair parameter when we wouldn't expect this instability to grow the most or this one to grow the most, just to check the theory. And so if you choose a system which is governed by two-stream instability, so not that one, of course, because that one is oblique. So if you run a simulation with this system, the system that gave rise to this spectra, you are going to find something like this, nested patterns like this. But if you choose purposely on purpose a system which is governed by the Weber instability, you find spaghetti like this. Okay. And if you choose on purpose a system which is run by two-stream instability, for example, decreasing a little bit the Lorentz factor of this kind of stuff, you get this. Okay. So now, if you ask which instability is likely to grow the most, as long as you are cold, in all these phase space parameter, these Weibull wins here for I density ratio and then oblique wins. And then if you put beam temperature and you fix the temperature of this guy to 5 keV, you find that. So behind this cliff here, two-stream mode, they win. Behind this mountain, Weibull wins, and all over the place, over everywhere else, oblique wins. So these are two slides on the scalings on oblique modes. I'm just going to skip to this because what you see that oblique modes are really similar to two-stream modes in the linear regime. The scaling of the growth rate with respect to the beam temperature is the same. Growth rate, you get 1 over gamma b and 1 over gamma b to the 1/3. That's the only difference. And in terms of the dilution ratio between the beam and the background plasma, you have a transition from the 1/3 to just one power if you are cold or hot. And I just want to go quickly to this Fermi calculation. So as I told you, if filamentation is the business of unbalanced currents, so this one is going to push this one is going to exert a B this way, this one a B this way, and if you look at the Lorentz force, it repairs even more the two currents. And so you can compute, you can just write Newton's equation. Chi is the dimensionless distance between the two beams. And so if you just write the evolution of this system, well, you don't find an exponential growth of R, but you find exactly the right time scale, which is here the delta square is exactly the growth rate. Another example of Fermi calculation, which I like, it's in these two papers, is Rayleigh-Taylor instability. If you perturbate so you all know about Rayleigh-Taylor. If you have a perturbation of your interface, the pressure of this side goes like this one. The pressure of this side goes like this one. And so the force here on the interface goes like the difference of the density times the amplitude of the difference. And which is the amount of fluid you're moving is going to go like, so the amount of mass you're going is going to go like 1 over k, because it gives you the amount of fluid you're moving on this side and on this side, times the sum of the density. And from this, you can compute directly the growth rate. And if you are relativistic, it's been done in this paper, you can directly adapt your understanding, and you go straightforwardly to the result. So, how far are we from such an understanding in two-stream and oblique? Where? Nowhere. I mean, you can roughly understand why it grows, but I never seen anywhere such an understanding that you can shortcut the equation and write the growth rate directly. And I think it would be really useful Because for the related Lorentz stability, for example, when you really understood what's going on, you can plug a magnetic field, surface tension, elasticity, plasticity, and you get it. So which is why I put this, because in many occasions, I feel like math are like a dog for a blind man. Okay. So it takes you to the solution, but it doesn't tell you why or how you got there. And for example, the dispersion equation for two-string instability is really simple. But intuitively, it's hard to understand. Okay, and so I just skip my conclusion, and I say watch nonlinear evolution, because you may have surprises in the nonlinear region. Thank you.
So we have some time for questions, but while it's happening, I'll get Jim to set up.
Yeah, Antoine, I agree with you on the set, but let me just ask you, if the oblique one is the quickest, it will then change your distribution function. Does your calculation take that into account?
No, it's purely linear.
So it could be completely different. Let's imagine the oblique one is the quickest, it will work back on the distribution function, and then you will get completely different results.
That's why there is watch something there for you.
Yeah, do you have any idea whether that would be important or not?
Well, I remember a simulation, a long-term simulation that we ran.
So the picture will show you.
Yeah, a peak simulation, that's at the end, you know it, that's at the end of the review paper. Yeah. When you start oblique, and the general rule that is going to touch upon in the nonlinear regime, we said, is that each instability commits suicide growing. I would put it this way. And so, oblique commits suicide. Then you recover a system which is roughly like two-stream unstable. Then two-stream commits suicide, but you still have a relative motion, which is Weibull unstable. And so at the end of the day, you recover something which is Weibull unstable. So we could trace, I would say trace in a linear way, if for example we took, so initially we were oblique unstable, then we want kind of two-stream unstable, we could fit the distribution function at this stage, and look according to a linear formalism, should it be oblique, two-stream, or Weibull? And we found accurately that, okay, we can still reason quasi-linear. Okay. But then there was no way of explaining in a linear thinking the subsequent evolution and the filamentation. But I think that, to my knowledge, whether or not you always end up with something which is kind of with filaments is an open question. I don't know.
And now, what you call oblique, could this be oblique electrostatic modes?
Yeah. They are nearly electrostatic.
And are they heating? I mean, this one will probably influence Avery and Crystal very much. But if you say it doesn't affect the growth of the parallel electrostatic, you also can get oblique electrostatic. So they might still heat like crazy, right?
Oh, yeah, they're going to heat. But once again, that's why I reemphasize I'm just talking linear. And that one that I watch non-linear, because yeah, you have a lot of subsequent evolution. Yeah. And you can end up, if you see the last stage of this big simulation that we ran 6 years ago, you feel like, oh, it's viable. No, we started oblique, but we ended up like this.
Now, in reality, we are dealing with Lorentz factors of 10 to the 6 and density contrast of 10 to the minus 15. I noticed from your calculation that we have Lorentz factors of 5 or 4.94. Mm. So what happened at 10 to the 6?
Well, if you could, it's the same. Now, each time I talk to particularly same people, what they tell me, all we can do is check the scaling until the computer can do it.
I know.
Because if you plug 10 to the 8 in the computer, it's going to be angry.
And finally, I mean, all this assumes that you have a homogeneous background. Now, what would happen if you have large-scale gradients in the density distribution? People claim that would also stabilize the system.
Yeah, I don't know.
It can't be done.
Although he is.
I would interject and say that you should listen to Muhammad's talk. We've begun to look at that.
Yeah, okay.
But for a percent one.
Okay.
Full line is as much as possible.